Welcome to the Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 27th on the West Coast, now June the 28th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd also like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and hope you also find this show very informative and possibly even eye-opening. What are we going to talk about tonight? Well, let's start off by the new news coming out, and that's that Michelle Bachmann tied Mitt Romney in the primary there in the state of Iowa, primary election for running for the presidency of the United States. They have to bring out another version of Sarah Palin, and already there is a controversy. Already the media is attacking Bachmann for having received, let's say, farm subsidies related to a farm that she claims she nor her husband own, yet she's on the list of participants in the property and the payments awarded in the terms, in the form of farm subsidies. And let me tell you that if you begin doing some of the research that I have done on the banking fraud and the real estate fraud going on in this country, you would actually have to investigate every single member of Congress and likely most of those in the upper class of the military, as well as in the administration. The aliases they use, the names who they hide these properties under, and millions of farmers have gone out of business and had their properties foreclosed, and somebody takes over those properties. And after they take them over, they award themselves farm subsidies. You should be outraged by what's going on. So this is just a drop in the bucket, and it's the typical controversy. Now, why weren't they all over the no-legged Mac Daddy when he didn't have a certificate of live birth? Why didn't they go after the Federal Elections Commission or the Democratic National Committee, who doctored up all of the no-legged Mac Daddy's documentation at the convention? Why not? Why are they jumping all over this person? I'm sure if they investigated Mitt Romney, they would find similar anomalies in his background. Well, I could go on that topic, but there are other topics to discuss. Certainly the health of the people in this nation and the assault they're under, the multi-pronged attack through the Center for Disease Control, as they like to call themselves. They're controlling disease. What does that actually mean? Well, we'll ask tonight's guest. He is a regular on Monday nights on Evident Footprints. He hosts his own show on the Micro Effect Network. It's called The Story Behind the Story. He is a naturopath and a PhD, a documented PhD, in fact, an author, journalist, even a blogger. And he's my co-host and guest on Monday nights, Dr. Atru Ott. Dr. Ott, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. My goodness, what a day. It's been a long day of research, I got to tell you.
I know the feeling. I do. I really do. And the folks out there in the listening audience have no idea what we're talking about. But nonetheless, you came out with another piece today, which is sort of dovetailing into maybe 20 other topics, but Why don't you – do you feel like sharing that with the listening audience tonight?
Yes, I'm kind of jealous of your hour on, you know, the time that you're doing this show, actually. I have so many guests that would love to be on the show, but they have to take time out of their professional work. One of our colleagues in this exposure of the vaccine fraud and the vaccinosis, not only, you know, the over-vaccination poisoning of humans, but also pets, is Patricia Moynihan Jordan. Patricia Jordan is a doctor of veterinary medicine. Flat out, just as a wealth of information. This woman just has everything so well documented right at her fingertips. Mm-hmm. And Don, you know, when we talked about this so-called zombie apocalypse report out of the CDC, you know, we talked about it on the show, and you and I both laughed. You know, it's a funny topic, zombie apocalypse. But, you know, I said, well, I'm going to see what Dr. Jordan's take on it is. And, oh, my goodness, did she have I could spend a full 3 or 4 days reading and digesting all of the reports, the documents, the documentation she has given me on the recombinant or the mutant. It's what's called a chimera, C-H-I-M-E-R-A, chimera virus that is absolutely built in a laboratory. And
yes, I was going to ask, but assuming that it probably was.
Indeed. This, you know, I guess what I need to say tonight is, you know, we can talk about these things till we're blue in the face. I don't, you know, I'm to the point now, Don, where it's, you got to get in and just get active and just take this case to the state, each state's health department. Give them the papers, the documents in a nice little packet of information. Be educated. Someplace, somewhere, somehow, we the people have got to stand up and stop this, because I'm telling you, they are loading a pointed gun at the head of this collective nation. And not only are they pointing it, but this double-odd buck round is cocked and primed and ready to pull the trigger. There's no doubt about it, I know. And we're talking, ladies and gentlemen, about a mutant rabies recombinant virus that's been meshed in with influenza, H1N1 and H3N2 human viruses that, by all intents and purposes in the reports, it has a 98% mortality ratio. This thing is just an absolute killer.
Now, am I correct to understand that this is an aerosolized delivery?
Yes, it is.
Type of virus? So they could put this in chemtrails, for example, or just spray it in the skies.
Yeah, it would be more like, not the high-level chemtrails, Don. It would be more of a crop duster type of plane, or just a, yeah, you know, like those raid cans, okay, you know, those bug killer cans. If you just put it into a crowded elevator, or I'm sorry, subway system, in a big city, because see, once this is in the air, people carry it, and it's transmissible just like an influenza virus would be transmissible. So it would be like a pandemic outbreak. This is a stunning, stunning story. And I talked on my show today, this Deccan Chronicle, D-E-C-C-A-N Chronicle. I'm not aware of this, who puts it out. I believe it's kind of a veterinary chronicle or publication, but I could be wrong there. The story was published Saturday, the 25th of June, and the headline is simply reads "Mutant rabies, flu viruses could lead to havoc." Yeah. I mean, this is a tremendous story. It's posted on my blog, atruot.com, with Dr. Jordan's research. And everything she's saying in there is doubly documented, folks. It's just not somebody out crying, you know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. It's absolutely a stunning story. And Don, I got to tell you, I don't know why nobody in the alternative media is talking about it. It seems like we have to wait until somebody gets sick and is dying with something before the announcement of a pandemic is on us, and before anybody really starts getting involved. I submit with this particular agenda, there's no time to wait. If this thing is in fact released, if it's triggered, there will be absolute devastation in our cities. No doubt about it.
Yeah. The purpose is obvious, but how do you suppose, first of all, on the heels of this zombification story that came out, by the way, that's been picked up by mainstream newspapers across the country. Mm-hmm. So there is a concerted effort to get that story out, A, to create fear, or B, to misinform, or C, to do both. But there's no serious discussion about it anywhere. It's as if no one said anything. So,
well, yeah, it's like a knee jerk reaction to be a joke, a ha ha story around a cocktail party. Okay, I know. I've talked to people about it, and they look at me like you're not seriously considering this. See, it's so out there in left field that people just aren't taking it seriously whatsoever. Again, this Deccan Chronicle, I'm not sure who the author of it is, who the writer is, but here's what it says, and I quote, it says, the rabies virus, when mutated with the influenza virus, will behave like a zombie with uncontrolled madness. The infected humans, too, will behave like zombies, according to a National Geographic report. Now, my goodness. The point that Patricia Moynihan Jordan said in her post was simply she knows the names of the big pharma companies that have been producing this, and you know, she has the documentation as to who's really involved in this. And talking, you know, emailing her and communicating with her, Don, she, I got to tell you, she says, well, if she starts, you know, really making waves in this, there'll be all kinds of racist, anti-Semitism charges placed against her. And she's, because we're talking about a group of Nazi so-called Zionists at the top of this thing.
Mm-hmm. Says what we've been talking about. Now, who, what branch of government does she say this is coming through? Is this something going through the Pentagon, Homeland Security, NSA, FEMA, maybe some obscure pharmaceutical connection?
Well, it's not so much obscure. There's a branch of this pharmaceutical company in Mexico that's busy manufacturing the vaccine for it. Okay, there's got to be a vaccine, but who knows how effective that's going to be on this type of a nasty. Maybe the vaccine will just kind of cause you to not die, but maybe turn you into a living dead type of thing. Because there's going to, when you have this virus attack the brainstem and do what it does in the pineal regions of the central nervous system, by all reports, this can cause permanent strangeness, lunacy. zombie, zombification, Living Dead. It's bizarre. It's a bizarre story in any way you slice it.
Well, there's not a whole lot of difference between that and the educational system, you know, as far as making somebody be brain dead.
Yeah.
And that I intended to make that remark. I happened to catch a short segment of a show called Repos, or it's some kind of Repo Man show, where they knock on a door, people are behind on their car payments, and they bring them out, and they're usually they get ticked off right off the bat, and they tell the people to leave, and they say, no, we're really here to repossess your car, or your truck. In some cases, it's all the family cars, and we're going to make you an offer. If you play this game with us, and you have to answer 3 out of 5 questions correctly, they're trivia questions, then we'll pay off your car and you can keep it. So one girl says, oh, I'm smart. I got straight A's in school. So The first question they ask her is, who flew a kite to prove that electricity is conductive and it can be captured? And, she's stammering over the question. Finally, she says, Bill Clinton.
I think, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. She said, Bill Clinton. Now, then again, you know, if it were Benjamin Franklin who had done this, actually, do you think he would have been alive if he had conducted electricity to a kite? And he was holding the other end of the kite. Would he really have been alive?
Well, the key supposedly stopped it, you know, right?
yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And anyway, it was just a series of questions. The first question was, who are the 3 mascots of Rice Krispies? Okay.
Well, Snappy, Crackly, and Poppy.
Well, yeah, Snap, Crackle, Pop, right? Her answer was Fred.
What?
Her answer was Fred. Okay, now, they don't teach you that in school. They teach you that on television. It was the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen in your life. But it's a good cross-section of the people out there that are qualifying for auto loans, and yet, you know, they don't. Oh, I can't say it on the radio.
Yeah, but I guess you can just stick a fork in us all, and a society is concerned, if that's the way it is, because, I mean, we're done.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I couldn't watch anymore. I thought the depravity of what they put on TV. Now, this is supposed to be a thriller. This is spellbinding type of television that is supposed to entertain. Well, it's you can't even qualify it as entertainment. It's definitely an indication of the dumbing down process. So there's not a whole lot of difference between someone at that stage of consciousness and succumbing to this virus. Now, have they given it an actual name?
Well, again, it's the zombie virus. That's where it's being euphemistically named. You know, it's a mutant rabies and influenza virus, but it is being called the zombie virus. Again, in all of the official documents, and again, this University of Ottawa report from the statistics and mathematical department to basically give logarithmal formulas to the number of dead to be expected, the infestation rates based on mortality figures. This is something that they can feed into, and now a master computer with these programming formulas done, and they'll know exactly the end result. And What Dr. Jordan shared with me was the fact that these these mutant killer viruses have been given to the Chinese government. I mean, if that isn't high treason, where have we gone in as a country where we think this is okay? China is not our friend. They may supply all of the store shelves at Walmart and Sam Walton's business and other major store chains, but doggone it, they are not our friend. They are the communist nation of China is an absolute false ideology. So where have we gone? Hello, Don. Are you with us? Looks like we... Okay, I can surely can. We can stop, start, keep talking. I wonder what happened. Okay. So we've lost the host. That happens. I know how it feels when I do my show and my guest is left sitting there holding the bag. But yeah, the fact of the matter is, again, these mutant Chimera viruses, they're in the possession of the Chinese government. And again, the reports are very accurate on that. So who's in charge of the nut house with this? That's the big question. Is it legitimately a concern that they would want to release this to wipe out 90-95% of the population centers of America? Well, I wonder if Don just lost his power or something, because sometimes that happens. The power grid in Ohio is subject to change. Here we go. Hello, Don. Still no connection. I'll probably have to... Oh, there we go. There's a ringing.
I'm here.
You were gone.
I was about to answer your question, and then I disappeared into cyberspace.
That happens. So.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, you don't... the Chinese are very, very shrewd with this stuff. Again, it goes back to that the Hu Jintao, the defense minister's intercepted speech back in 2006, where he laid it out. They want to colonize America, Canada, Australia, and they said that it needs to be cleaned up, which is basically code for take out the... non-Asians, basically. Yeah, so yeah, I just asked the question, Don, who's in charge of this
man? Well, it's the whole world. It's not just this country, but certainly they're trying to incapacitate America because the people are armed.
Yes.
It goes back to what we were saying back in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. Same story, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, when you look at when we had Trooper Greg Evanson on the show, and his radio appearances were fantastic. About he knew from his contacts in the Highway Patrol, of course, what was being planned for martial law and roadblocks based on this we thought at the time could be this killer virus of influenza. But like I said on the show today, Don, I see this now, the pandemic of 2009, 2010, it's a dry run to see what infrastructure they needed to get through, and really to see how the American public as a whole would buy into it. I see now how it could just a dress rehearsal, basically. Well, it's like we lost Don once again. What a glitch. Well, he had some comments to make on that. We had had discussed earlier in the day how this kind of ties into some other research and documentation that I did provide to Don earlier. And we were going to link that in. Well, we'll just see if we can get him back here. And hopefully it won't be too long again. Apologize for this, of course. So we'll just try and keep it moving. Whenever you have the CDC issuing their statements on the so-called zombie virus and how it would be basically spread among the animals, even in the wild. This really ties into this Deccan Chronicle story. Let me just get out the high points here of this article again. It says, quote, in the midway to the article, the nearer the route of infection of the rabies virus to the brain, the faster the death, adds veterinary surgeon Dr. Muralidhar. Some scientists visualize a zombie-like situation in the world of humans if the rabies and human influenza viruses undergo hybridization. See that? There it is. They visualize a zombie-like situation if these rabies and human influenza viruses start to hybridize. Now, what? Again, this person on that is putting this piece out doesn't understand is that in the weapons laboratories of Fort Detrick, this is not a natural process. This is indeed already happened. The hybridization, the genetic link-up has indeed occurred already. So the question is, becomes, how will they use it? What will they do with it? Okay. This, again, is a funny article. I wonder if it's not in the land down under. Because it says, Dateline June 25th, it said, quote, the rabies season has just receded, and it's time now for the human influenza or common cold to make our lives miserable. So it's probably in the southern hemisphere where the winter season is just beginning. Rabies and the common cold, though their effects on our health are very different, are both caused by viruses, the article says, and there is no known medical cure for either. Well, there is medical, not so much medical cures, but natural cures for any virus. There really is. Viruses do not survive ozonation. They don't survive the high temperatures above 104, 105 degrees. But this article says, quote, again, this is true enough, while the common cold subsides within a week without causing much harm, rabies has always proven to be lethal. Of late, with rabies and influenza, particularly the type of influenza caused by the H1N1, which is a swine virus, creating panic in the state, scientists took time off to imagine the sort of scenario we see in those Hollywood flicks in which viruses mutate or hybridize to emerge as dangerous pathogens.
Well, I'm back again, a second time.
You quit doing that, Don. You know, it's not, it's very impolite of you.
It's not me. You know that. You were saying, see.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I thank you for filling in. I'm sure you did.
Well, I just went and jumped into this this Deccan Chronicle article again, just starting to share and read it. But yeah, Don, golly, you know where this ties in is you think about again what Dr. Jordan had posted to me, the fact that there are these rabies baits. They're supposedly set out to vaccinate the wild animals, your coyotes, your foxes, in some parts of the country now, the wolves, for heaven's sakes. You know, bats carry a lot of rabies, so they set these baits out for these mammals. Well, what's happening is there's a marked increase in rabies because of these baits, these natural vaccines for the wild creatures. And as she says so well, that these baits were set out in parts of the United States on Halloween night, for heaven's sakes, when kids are out trick-or-treating.
That's an interesting time, isn't it?
Oh, indeed. It's she says it's just they're playing a very dangerous game here, and they have to know better. They have to be doing this by specific design. And then you have the timing of the CDC's report on the zombie apocalypse when it begins to show its face, that they would be at the forefront identifying its origins and the virus in which it was caused. You know?
Yeah. Now, the first time I got knocked off, I was about to make a comment about the recombinant strains that you referred to, not by that term, but that they could create a myriad of or a number of versions, let's say, of these viruses. And that brings us back to that daylight Descartes software run with the Oracle computers and its association with the swine flu and the bird flu, H5N1 and H1N1 strains. And those were just two posted on a Chinese website, by the way.
Well, you did a good piece of research. I think that was back in 2009, if I'm not mistaken, where you tied that software program to Dr. Orly Tate's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Just a strange thing going on there. Ladies and gentlemen, the reason why that's important to understand is because the computer structures that to map these DNA strands, they couldn't do this chimera gene splicing, these genetic modifications of these viruses without this computer sequencing. It's impossible.
Yeah. I was reading up on what – did you mention the bats?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You did. Okay. Well, I'm behind on the show, but ahead on my reading. why bats? You know, that comes back to the stories about Ebola and the simian research that was being done in the 80s and the 90s. Mm-hmm. And the one version of Ebola that was coined the name Reston Ebola, coming out of Reston, Virginia. And they discovered that someone who had investigated where that might have come from had walked into a cave that was filled with bat guano. And that it's possible that they actually put the virus in there for the purpose of having the bats distributed as they went about at night hunting for prey. And then coming back and probably ingesting it, and then coming back and adding to the pile, so to speak, and causing people to spread it. The first case happened on an airplane coming to the United States. Any comment about that?
Well, it's funny because my sweetheart is really kind of worked up. In our home, we have quite a interesting alcove over the front door. It's brick. It's quite high. I don't know how, maybe 14, 16 feet, and it's shaded there, so it's a nice little place for our little bat friends to come in when they're been flying around the street lights, and they like to just sit there and digest their bug meal, and they'll start doing some dropping. And my wife is like most women, I guess, the sight of a mouse will send her into a on top of a chair and a scream faster than anything you've ever seen. And bats are just mice with wings, and it just really creeps her out. But there was, she went online just recently to the Utah Health Department, and they just posted a really strong warning against coming in contact with bat feces, bat guano. And it's never been that way before. I mean, you don't go walking into caves and sniffing up bat guano, but they're actually saying that if you have any barn or shed with where bats kind of hang out, to mix up a bleach detergent spray and sanitize it immediately. Now, why all of a sudden are the health department taking these precautions on bat guano?
Well, I find just the topic of bat guano interesting, because when I was doing some research a few years ago, I discovered that W.R. Grace and Company, which is primarily known as a chemical company, got its start in South America, in Lima, Peru, by selling bat guano. That's a whole... We could do a whole show on that company and the power that they exert across the planet. Bat guano. The cover story is that they were selling it for fertilizer. But the question is, what were they fertilizing?
Well, amazing.
Step right up. Ladies and gentlemen, get your bat guano here.
Yeah, we'll put it on your peas and your carrots. So. there is minerals in bat guano, phosphates and other minerals, but there's minerals and phosphates in steer manure or any other manure as well. So, it seems like bat guano is. Those little mice, versus a buffalo or a cow, why collect the difference? So, yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing story. Anybody that really wants to read Dr. Jordan's communication with me on the subject, in fact, read that recombinant virus piece and the havoc it's supposedly going to be raking on the country. Just go to my website. It's just atruot.com.
Mm-hmm. The person that I presume you copied that verbatim as it was posted. The individual that crafted that piece never heard of paragraphs, did they?
No. It's just again right out of whatever this chronicle is. I'm assuming it's in Australia, New Zealand, because, again, they're saying that the rabies season has just receded now for the human influenza common cold to begin. So that would probably put it into the southern hemisphere there, Don. But, yeah, The point is, right now in America, things are coming to a head pretty quickly with this. Again, it was just such a strange blog post by Dr. Khan, K-A-K-H-A-N. They're the CDC. And Dr. Khan's curriculum vitae, I mean, good golly, this guy's on the top rung of Navy intelligence. Good heavens. Why would he be posting something warning America of zombie apocalypse if there really wasn't something going on?
Mm-hmm. Well, naval intelligence, contrary to what most people know, and certainly falls in line with their belief, is that they're involved with the space program. Every bit as much as the Air Force, but they're involved with the underground bases where this stuff is probably being developed. Did she say specifically where this had been developed? If you mentioned it, I didn't hear it.
She has the documentation. I think she's not willing to divulge it right away, but I'm sure she will eventually. I don't think she wants to be tied into the disclosure of it. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, she did say that she would give me the full picture soon.
Okay.
So we got zombies and we got bats hanging from the rafters and we got vampires and we got werewolves, and the world is so crazy, I'll tell you.
And you know, aliens too, don't forget them.
Oh yeah, those little gray boys or whatever they are. But you know, I just have been perhaps a little bit more preoccupied than I should be with this personal attack that's come against me and you as well, and people like Ted Gunderson from a source that really shouldn't be doing such a thing. I mean, we're all on the same team, we would think. And so I get into the whys and hows of all of this, Don, I got to tell you that, man, I just keep reverting back to the testimony of Clay Douglas and what he has to say on his personal experience with the good Dr. Horowitz. And you know, his story is amazing, and it's actually he discusses it on his radio show, and it's the clip of it is actually on YouTube. Just all you have to do is the YouTube search engine, just type in Clay Douglas and Leonard Horowitz, and you'll come up with his blog there. So, yeah, when you hear the discussion going on, you think, oh, well, Clay Douglas has had too much to drink. You know, maybe he was a little bit tipsy when he went in there. But I've talked to people, you know, that have known Clay Douglas. And he has, you know, he's got quite a reputation of integrity in reporting, and he doesn't exaggerate stories. That's the general consensus of Mr. Douglas. So yeah,
he's telling the truth, is what you're saying.
Yeah, he called me up last year, Don, out of the blue. This is when that first hit piece came down, where you were the assassin of Chris Story and Don Harkins. I was nothing, you know, at that point, but just an agent provocateur. I've been now elevated up in the ranks to the murdering head of the whole cartel. So, you know, but it's funny. He calls me and said, "Well, what did you do to make Horowitz mad at you?" And I said, "Good golly, I don't know. I received a phone call from Sherry Kane, who was quite a deceiving phone call. She says she was an investigative reporter that was tied into Fox News, and she was doing a follow-up on my interaction with Dr. Len Horowitz, and she wanted to see, you know, she was trying to get me to come out and you know, talk bad about the doctor. And I said, I'm not, I don't. And I explained to her, you know, that my history with Horowitz, what limited the interaction we did have. And that, what I thought was the end of it. And then she followed up with an email asking why I talked about this on Arctic Beacon, Greg Szymanski's show. And I said, well, if you really listen to the archives of that, it was nothing but speculation on both parts as to the rationale of this Knights of Malta connection, this Knights Hospital, the knighthood situation. That's it. And I just said, look, it's simply this. There's some credibility issues now with the doctor. And that's how I left it, Don. And so I explained this to Clay Douglas. I said, I don't really know why they're targeting me, Clay. I really don't. Then Clay went on and explained what happened with him and his, oddly enough, at a conspiracy conference setting, that his Patriot magazine was had actually posted and published the some Khazarian Jewish connections to the Federal Reserve, the whole basic underpinnings of really who is causing so much havoc in the financial realm, as all, and also the government shadows. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he just explained to me on the phone, he said, then Horowitz, who had been writing quite a number of expose articles for Clay Douglas's magazine, he said that he became very upset and demanded, to know why Clay would publish such anti-Jewish, rhetoric without his approval. And Douglas said, he responded, well, since when do you tell me what I can publish, And the thing escalated, and the whole story is there on the YouTube, where they had an altercation in the elevator, and Douglas told me, he says, I swear to you, as God is my witness, this man did a shape-shifting into a very, very bizarre creature. Right? And I asked him specifically, I says, tell me exactly what you saw. He says, well, his hairline receded, his face immediately began to shape. There was a snout that came very prominent, and teeth. It just started happening in just literally as fractions of a second. And Clay said it was identical to something you would see on an American Werewolf in London. That's how he explained it to me.
Now, you had suggested that people read a book called The History of Werewolves, and actually I obtained a copy of it and read about half of it, and it's quite interesting. It's a very unique way of writing, of course.
Now, we're talking about the book. It's called The Book of Werewolves by Sabine.
The Book of Werewolves, yeah.
Okay.
I misspoke there. The Book of Werewolves by Sabine Baring Gould.
Gould, good, okay.
And he's talking about Iceland and Finland, the northern part of Europe as well.
Yeah, and it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's back in 1865. This study went on. This is not superficial writing either. It's a difficult read.
Well, if you look at the the pretext of writing this, again, it was a scientific analysis, you know, for scientists, for university research. It really, that's what's amazing with this. And again, the date of 1865, again, that's the era in America when, you know, we were just finishing up the Civil War. It gives you the time frame of this, and that he was extensively well traveled throughout of the, you know, the Serbian and Slavic regions. He, you know, if you really get into the book deeply, you'll see where he really has the lion's share of the credible studies in the area of of Gaul, south of France, and Normandy, and then going down into the Baltic states is really where the hotbed of this is, Don, in the records that he shows, the court records, the church records, the records of the execution of those that were caught doing this lycanthropy, as they called it, and still do at this day. Yeah, so this as you read this and start to digest it, you start to realize this is much more than just some myth and fables. There's something very much a central theme through all of this.
Yes, and he goes into quite a bit of detail about the I don't know what you would call it, rituals or attacks. I think there's a ritualistic side to it.
Oh, no doubt about it. It's a witchcraft coven, if nothing, you know, some very dark alchemy and deep black magic sorcery involved here. Now, in the French vernacular, they called it loups garou, L-O-U-P-S garou. I'm not sure what exact page this is on. It's roughly 40% of the book. The chapter, I'm on my Kindle, so it's kind of hard to give an exact page number, Don. But here is the quote that I want to share with the listeners tonight. And this is what it says: in Normandy, those who are doomed to be loups garou clothe themselves every evening with a skin called their hira or hura. H-U-R-E is the spelling, comma, which is a loan from the devil. When they run in their transformed state, the evil one accompanies them and scourges them at the foot of every cross they pass. So, you know, the actual name of this skin-walking tool, this girdle, this skin made of a human skin, and very much a satanic implement called Hora, H-U-R-E. All right, did you read that, get that far in the book yet?
Yes, I did. Yeah, actually, I did. Yeah, and I'm chuckling, I guess, because of the accuracy of what's being said and how it's portrayed, at least for movie purposes. It's portrayed pretty accurately in the movies, in a certain genre of those horror pictures. And it's funny they call them horror pictures. There seems to be parallels between what Baring Gould writes and the stories people like Clay Douglas and others have brought forth.
Well, indeed, you know, there's a second part of this. It's, as you take again the whole, I've reread this about four or five times. This definition section, Don. A lot of it's in foreign language that you might be, you know you're skilled in reading and speaking different languages, would mean more to you probably. But he discusses the fact that there's a bargain made, okay, with with the devil here on this, that you give up something for this ability to run with the wild, you know, run in the state. And, you know, you give up what the devil in the devil worshiping circles demands of the individual is giving up their soul, their wits, their, you know, in the medieval times, your essence of your independence, your very soul, is your mental capacity, your thought process, your very wit, yourself. And you think about it, Don, that word wit or wits in the Slavic tongue, in the Germanic tongue, wits, V-I-T or W-I-T-Z, has a common central theme with those who would cast the spell and basically make the pact with the devil would be those would be called witches. That's where you get the term witch from as well.
Yeah, he described the state of mind of the individual as, well, I think it's where we get the word berserk when we say, you know, when this person goes berserk. Berserke or berserkim in the different languages that they were writing, but they were saying that they just go crazy. There's no recollection of this having happened. Yet when they come back, they have sort of a subconscious recollection that something had occurred.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and, you busted out of your clothes, for one thing.
Yeah, and that's what this author shows is that there's theories behind this, and like he said so well in the book, there's he says, I don't have a werewolf on a chain to study. Okay, all he's doing is going into the archival records, the interviews with those that have had interaction, and then just going and piecing it together the best he can. And yeah, the theory at the time in 1865 was that this was a simply disease of the mind state where people had dreamed all this. You know, they were in an altered state of consciousness. They really didn't perform these things. They just thought that they did. Isn't that just kind of typical that today you have you know, science trying to explain a way out, explain away the metaphysical things that go bump in the night. They still do that today, whether it's ghosts or ghouls or demonic entities. It's always something in a figment of your imagination causing it all to happen.
Yeah, they publicly discount it and even ridicule those that bring the stories forth. Yet here's someone who studied it from a scientific approach, and the intention was to get to the truth and come to an understanding of what that phenomenon actually was at that time.
So those are, yeah.
I'm thinking of the story about the two brothers that were basically out there hunting, and they decided that they were going to refrain from calling for help. They had taught themselves to howl. He goes into the description, literally, of the whole process. And he describes three ways that one can actually make this transformation. It's not necessarily depicted as such in the movies. You know, in the movies, you get a bite, and then you begin transforming.
Right.
This is, according to Baring Gould, it is a conscious decision that somebody makes, and there's any one of the three paths that he describes as the means through which to attain that power. But then you give up everything else in your life. I mean, your life is not going to be normal after that.
Yeah, indeed, just researching this topic on the internet, lycanthropy is what it's called. If you go in and just search that through a search engine, there was thousands of web pages with very scholarly descriptions. Again, taking Baring Gould's work as one of the primer courses of it. Now, one internet site I looked at, Don, it just said this is describing outbreaks of rabies, again, bites and people going berserk because of a rabies. But see, that doesn't fit the model of Baring Gould. It's just these people just didn't die of hydrophobia. They lived, there's stories and cases and again, church records that they were basically put into the inner circle of an abbey, hopefully thinking that the holy, fathers of the abbey could cast out the evil in them. But then they just didn't work for them. They would go and eat the intestine, the offal of a slaughtered pig or a goat or whatever that the abbey would slaughter. This is not a case of hydrophobia or rabies.
No, he actually goes into talking about the son. I forget the name. Was it Bjorn? Son of one of the kings,
right?
One of the Nordic kings. And that he had entrusted the son with his second wife, who was chosen from another tribe. And she was sort of egotistical and haughty and was actually trying to seduce the son of the king. Here she is, a stepmother, trying to seduce him. And she put a curse on him, as he described it, in great detail. And he went out into the woods, and eventually they killed him. Now, he described it as he was turned into a bear.
Right, and it and again, with the Native American traditions, I got to tell you, Don, when I was an LDS missionary, I was in upstate New York, and my companion, see how the missionaries in Mormonism, they have never go by themselves. It's always a companion assigned to them. My companion, his name was Michael Chiquito from the Navajo Nation. We were there in the Cattaraugus Indian Reservation there in western New York's, upstate New York's state, and while doing our missionary work, we were invited by the tribe to go to a long lodge ceremony. The fact that Mike Chiquito, Elder Chiquito, as he was called then, was Navajo, the Indian tribe, the Cattaraugus tribe, really, thought he would like to see this dance, this ceremony. But long story short, we went to this long lodge, and as the dancers came in and started their dance, they had the full dress of the feathers and whatnot. Then there was the lights. They threw something into the fire, and it poofed into some different colors of the fire flame. And then out from behind the flames came these dancers in wolf skins. They had the wolf coming on, the way the rhythm of the dance. Looked around, Mike and Elder Chiquito was gone, like he had a fire on his toe. He got up and took off like he scorched the trail, man. And I thought, that was pretty rude. We're the guests of honor in this long lodge dance ceremony. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And here's my Indian companion hightailing it out as fast as he could run. And I made apologies. I thought he was ill or something, Don. And I finally calmed up. But he was terrified with a capital T.
Now, was he of the same tribe or?
No, he's Navajo. This was, you know, so we're talking about the Algonquin Cattaraugus Eastern tribe, but they were doing this dance. And but he said this was evil. He said these are skinwalkers, and he was terrified. He says and that's the first I'd ever heard of skinwalkers. He had a Navajo name for him too. I don't remember what that was, but he basically said the witches of the nations, they can don the wolf skin, and they actually have the skin sewn in with human flesh and skin. And he said, and he told me the most incredible stories that, and other things he himself had witnessed and his family had witnessed on the Navajo reservation there in Arizona. He believed it because he had witnessed it. I thought, my goodness, I don't know what to say about this. The ideas, he said, he says that there's no doubt about it that they can take whatever shape they want. He told the story of the witch being able to turn into a bear or a horse, but most often it was a coyote or a wolf.
Now, Baring Gould even refers to birds in his descriptions.
Yeah, he said that too. Yeah, he's just anything they, they had the different skins of, the different animals they wished to transmute into. And golly, my friend Mike Chiquito was adamant about. He says, don't mock what you don't know. He says, I know that you find it hard to believe, but it's real. And he told the story of he was driving out. This was just before he left on his LDS mission. He said him and his cousin were driving along the road and looked out, and there was a coyote running with him along the road, and then he watched it turn into the witch doctor, the shaman. He saw it turn back and forth three times as he was loping on all fours. So he says, make no mistake, they do this. He knows they do.
What was the purpose for your having been invited to witness this?
Well, we were out getting, the missionary.
You were recruiting more members for the Mormon Church?
Yeah, Mormon Church. We were just out, talking about the Book of Mormon and and yada, yada. And the connections we made with the Indian tribe, they just invited us to come and see some of their culture. There was some of a harvest, I believe it was in October. It was a harvest dance that they were doing, and it was traditional. And, we were happy to come and watch it with them. But it spooked the daylights out of my companion.
Now, the significance of the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, what is there a connection with this story you're telling and that? Because they refer a lot to gray aliens and spacecraft, coming in and out there, basically surveying what's going on, and a lot of paranormal phenomena as well.
Oh, indeed. That book, Hunt, Search for the Skinwalker, the story of the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, is an absolutely bizarre read. It's total nonfiction. The discovery team of SIDS or whatever it's called. Dr. Colm Kelleher, I've talked with him on the phone a number of times. Yeah, the book explains the Native America traditions of the Skinwalker, and there were very very much a number of Skinwalker type of episodes there on this ranch area. And the Ute Nation, that this is on the reservation of the Utes, basically, they have long considered that ranch area as a a sacred ground, kind of like a portal of energy that some weird, very strange anomalies come in and out of. So, yeah.
Well, it certainly sounds demonic. There's no doubt about that. And going back one final time here, we're going to have to close shortly. Baring Gould, in his book, describes the attacks upon Christians or Christianity.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's part of, again, it's a spiritual battle that seems to be waging since the dawn of creation with this. Because this is not something that just came out of nowhere in the Middle Ages. This traces back to, again, almost every, I would dare say every culture has their history. The Mayan cultures had, there's all sorts of evidence of, you know, in the hieroglyphic records of high priests being able to transmute and shapeshift into jaguars and birds, like you said, and snakes, big pythons. So yeah, this is Baring Gould covers the whole gamut from the Icelandic North, the Northland tribes, the Norse, the hotbed really being Romania, the Baltic, Hungarian, Slavic states. Yeah, but it's pretty doggone well documented, I would say.
Yeah, where's Lon Chaney when you need him?
Oh!
Well, it's been interesting, Dr. Ott, and I want to remind the listening audience about your radio show and your website. Please give those details out if you would.
Yeah, the radio show is the story behind the story. It runs from 10 a.m. to noon Mountain Time. That's 9 to 11 on the Pacific Coast, and of course 12 to 2 on the East Coast. But my blog is just simply www.atrueott.com.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank you for being on Evident Footprints, and definitely triple thanks for covering for me when I got knocked off my own show.
It's happened to me, as you know.
It's happening to a lot of people. It happens with increasing frequency. So, okay. But it hasn't gotten up to a certain number yet. We'll save that. Anyway, I guess we'll see you next week. And that'll also be next month.
Yes. July is upon us. 4th of July is coming. So be well, be safe, and thanks for having me, Don. Have a good day.
All right, my pleasure. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's guest, Dr. A. True Ott. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio. We had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guests will be Mr. Ken Adachi and Zora Nova star Livingstone. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Hey, everybody. This is your new friend, Julio, and I'm talking to you because I like to listen to BBSRadio.com. I sneak over the border every day, and I go see my girlfriend. She got a computer. Come on now, sing it, girls.
BBS Radio, 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 BBS Radio, Radio.com, BBS Radio, 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 BBS Radio, Radio.com.
Oh man, I love it when those girls sing like that, but I can't hang around, man, because the border guards are coming. So I'll catch you later, unless you catch me later. Bye-bye now.